Islands.
This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
You have to be strong in today's world.
Strong.
Keep your focus and
up.
What you believe in, how to achieve all your dreams.
Hey.
Keep moving forward. Never accept less than who you are. Live your best life.
Hey.
Be strong and free. It's the Hit Back.
Hey.
With Nahasha Black.
Hey.
It's the Hit Back.
Hey.
With Nahasha Black.
Hey.
It's the Hit Back.
Hey.
With Nahasha Black.
Hey.
It's the Hit Back.
Hey.
With Nahasha Black.
Hey.
Back with Nahasha Black. Sponsored by Scotiabank, CG Atlantic, Bar Retreat and Spa, and J.S. Johnson.
Good afternoon, Bahamas, and welcome to The Hit Back. I'm your host, Nahasha Black. I hope you are doing well, taking care of yourself, and living your best life today. So, I'm looking forward to the show. We got a lot to talk about today. I was, if you're watching online, you see I got on a big hat today. I was... I'm trying a big hat look. Big hat look today is what I'm trying, right? I'm not Baptist. I'm not Presbyterian. And I definitely could not do a walk. Thank you. See, someone loves the hat. Someone loves the hat. It's a big hat today. So I'm trying something a wee bit different. But I hope everybody's doing well, taking care of yourself, and living your best life today. We got a good show for you today. Rich on, see, folks love the hat. All right. Yes, the show is going to be lit because I got on the hat today. Okay, because I felt it today, I felt it today. Today was going to be something else after I read some things in the headline. But before, let's go with this. Let me just say something here. All right. What is the role of the media? So recently, one of those things that has been going on now is this conversation. I saw it. Philip Galanis is doing a 4-part series on the role of the media. As someone in media, we know that the media is constantly being bombarded. We have been called enemies of the state. We've been lied about. There's all kinds of things about what the media is and isn't, who's paid off, who isn't. No one presents any form of evidence or truth. And I think I should pull Cheryl Bazard and say it again, post your lies again, and let me lawyer up on you. But we digress, right? Say she ain't like the hot. I know, y'all. Dayon don't like the hot. But here is where we go, right? The role and function of the media, true and unbiased media, right? True and unbiased, right? Is that it has to be where we call it anything out for or against. One of the good things that you need media for is to, if you are a government, you want to disseminate information, you want to get people on the same page. So there are some things that you need the media for, right? The fourth estate, as it is called, right? The fourth estate, as it was called, right? And so we have this... job or function to do. What the media isn't, we aren't cheerleaders, right? Cheerleaders, have you ever been to a game where the team is losing, but the cheerleader still got to wave the pom-pom? It is the most ridiculous thing you've ever seen. It's the most ridiculous thing you've ever seen. Go to a Cowboys game. No, let's go to a Miami Dolphins team game. Let's go there. Go to a Dolphins game or just watch them. They don't even show you the cheerleaders anymore because what are we waving pom-poms for if your team is down? What are we waving pom-poms for? So the function of the cheerleaders is to continually try to get the crowd up. But if you've ever been to a game, like in Philly or something, in a football game, I'm talking using sports references now. If you've ever been to a Philadelphia Eagles game, when the team sucks, they let them know. They let them know that their team is the worst, right? They tell them, boo, put the brown paper bag on your head. At some point, you lose the crowd. So the media can't be the cheerleaders because the media has to be the one to say, you're losing the crowd. You're losing the fans by the play calling coach. Yeah? So then you can't. So the media isn't even the coach because we don't call the plays. So what are we? We are the commentators in the stand and saying, boy, I tell you, something ain't right about what we're seeing here. These players don't look right. Why would you make that call when you're in this position? Take it easy on the Dolphins. After they, a good thing I didn't pick the Dolphins this week, because then I really wouldn't have taken it easy on them. But after you've missed the call, you're still calling the same plays. You don't know the defense, right? You don't know the defense. So you're calling these plays and it's not working out. Ladies and gentlemen, I got to tell you something right now. Progressive Liberal Party, this administration has been calling some plays. And I'm trying to figure out where is the coach? What's going on here? Huh? What is going on here? We're bringing back some old players. And, you know, when you sign one old player who may not have been a fan favorite, right? You bring on an old player who's not a fan favorite. You already brought on someone who left the team, who's been to other, no, well, he ain't been to other teams, but he's left the team. We didn't extend the contract. But we bring him back on. We bring him back on. And so the people are like, okay, you know what? This is not good. We don't like the look, but this is a new coach. This is a new team. It's not the same crew. Different players. We might have kept one or two of the assistant coaches, one or two of X, Y, and Z. But this ain't the same team because we got a new coach. Okay. But then we bring on some other old players at high salary or allegations, allegedly so. Sina Hodge, what are you talking about? Ladies and gentlemen, I'm trying to figure out what the PLP is doing right now. Because of the allegation, the storyline done by Candia Dames today, saying that Shane Gibson is being considered for any role at any place within this government or in any board, that's an old player who is not a fan favorite. Okay? Now, I've been hearing that, okay, well, he's been, why are PLPs all of a sudden bringing up Shane Gibson as if we're talking about shingles around the curve? Yeah, he may have been exonerated from that, but he was not a fan favorite going back to Nicole, what's her name? The late Nicole, I was going to say Martin, but that ain't it. It's not Martin. What's the name? What's the name of a CA? Mouthit. Anna Nicole, right? The late Anna Nicole. Mr. Shane Gibson has not been a fan favorite with all of the Nygaard story. Mr. Gibson has not been a fan favorite. To bring back an old player who was not needed or asked for does not bode well on the coach. You know what it makes me wonder? Who's the general manager? Who's the owner of the team? Because sometimes you got coaches who don't own the team. Sometimes you got to wonder if somebody else telling the coach who to put on the team. Because this would make no sense unless you're desperate. And you can't be desperate this early because it's supposed to be your team. Mr. Prime Minister, I'm wondering right now, what are you doing? What are you thinking? I ain't gonna lie to you, this hat does look like a little witch's broom hat right now. I lose on focus, but this hat got to get changed in the break. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out what is this? Jerome Fitzgerald is now a part of the government. I was told Mr. Fitzgerald is a person who gets the job done. He is a trusted advisor. So, all right, because there's a lot. Listen, when I tell you this government is going to face a lot of things, I'm giving all the time for the Progressive Liberal Party to get themselves together, giving them all the time that they need, which will, after Wednesday, we'll know exactly what their platform is or their plan is going forward. Because that's the first sitting of the House. A lot of pronouncements, legislation, we see what's going on, right? We will look for that. So when you mentioned Jerome Fitzgerald and that he is someone that is trusted, then fine, I'd let that slide. But then you bring on someone else who's questionable. This is not to say, I've never met Mr. Gibson. Don't know him personally. He may be a great person. There may be great stories to tell. But I'll tell you from outside looking in, and as someone who sits in the commentary booth, closer to the fans, he is not a fan favorite. And it brings to question, what are we doing? Before the Bahamian people can really hear what you're doing for us, what we've seen so far is an alignment of the team and getting all of the posts sorted, but we're asking what is going on for us. You see, we're giving time. This is new day. New day, old faces. Same script, different cast. I don't know what's going on here. But it does bring alarm and concern. And I think if the Progressive Liberal Party wants to stay in the good graces of the people who voted, because again, remind yourself, PLP, be mindful that the media is not here for pom-pom waving. We support you as most sensible Bahamians. We want you to succeed, because when you succeed, we succeed. I got assets that I need to stay in a stable economy. So I need you to succeed. But I assure you, we're not here to wave pom-poms. We're not here to make you feel good. You're here to work on our behalf. We may not always be right as the citizenry. It is your job and function to help us understand the hard roads, not your function to dictate the way forward. So now when we're talking, you know, when you're talking about bringing in some folks with questionable, because you knew when you brought in Fitzgerald, Mr. Jerome Fitzgerald, people would question it. You knew it. And you rolled that out. But now you're going to try and ride this one out. And then in some place that's corporate. Huh? Where's the wisdom in this? Where's the wisdom in this? The majority of the people, well, the majority did vote. And you won the majority of the seats. But don't end up like the former government or the government prior. Because once you've lost the common sense, the understanding, because it's hard to understand some of these moves. But you got time. But that time is running out. It would be wise to reconsider some of these folks you're posting. And the hypocrisy of those within the party who are now trying to make it seem as if, what's wrong with that? Why can't he? If this was under the former administration, it would be the same thing. It would be the same conversation. And folks are talking about second chances. This is not about, listen, man, we have to come on now. What are we trying to do? Are you trying to effectively, are you saying then that without Mr. Gibson, we can't be successful in government? Is that what you're saying? Without Shane Gibson, we cannot be successful in leading this country to the new day? He is that pivotal in the role? If he's so pivotal, you should have ran with him. But you know why you didn't run with him? You mean to tell me all of the brilliant Bahamians, we need to recycle or bring back? Why? When do you know when you got to cut bait? Some things you better keep in the shadows, you know. Some things you don't even bring in the light of the sun. Some things are best to be in the shadows. This one was not wise to me. And I would hope that the prime minister is not seeking to lose ground when he's barely made money. It's just goodwill, you know. It's just the beginning is just goodwill. This is goodwill in the beginning. The goodwill in the beginning can be lost just as the former administration lost their new and goodwill at the beginning. The House of Assembly will convene for the first time under this administration on Wednesday. We are looking for substantive presentations, not just what the Free National Movement did. No. Second chances. And you know, we're going to talk about the hypocrisy of it. If you're talking about, well, he deserves a second chance, well, y'all need to forgive Dr. Minnis and move on. And Dr. Minnis should be able to run again. Y'all talking about second chances. So let's be fair here. There are some who should not be in places of leadership anymore if you are talking about being able to keep the collective. You keep the collective. That's what it is. You keep the collective. Do not lose the collective and gain one. The collective is what you need to govern. The majority of the people is what you need to govern. And the majority of the people today are very frustrated and concerned with this move if it is true or it is impending. Now, the media hasn't been far off on many picks. You know, the media hasn't been far off, right? The media hasn't been far off on many picks. So we'll see how this goes. Someone said, Nahaja Anton is coming for you. It wouldn't be anything new. The Free National Movement is still coming for me. They said I'm an enemy of the state. The PLPs will come. I tell y'all every day, it doesn't matter who or for, you know, I stand in the middle, and the middle is for the people. The middle is, at the end of the day, we all are going to have to get up and go to work tomorrow if you're fortunate to have a job. Nobody pays my bills. Guardian, thank you, Jesus, for the little extra change. Yeah? Well, my husband has been faithful and taking care of it. Love that man. Shout out to Mr. Black. But today, ladies and gentlemen, we don't have time for slapping up, making room. We're in a financial crisis. We are in a healthcare crisis. And we need answers. No more parades. No more walking about. We need answers. And we give the government time to find those answers, you know. We give the government time to get the answers, get the data. I like what I've seen so far. I do. Minus one or two, including this one allegation. Or, you know, not allegation. Allegation sounds like it's a crime. If this story pans out to be true. All right? If the story pans out to be true, we'll see. We'll see. But right now, ladies and gentlemen, I don't think it's wise that what is being alleged with Mr. Shane Gibson is a wise move by the Progressive Liberal Party, by this administration. You got your Jerome Fitzgerald, and I've been told, Nahaja, trust us, and the Jerome Fitzgerald is the man who gets things done. He gets it done. Okay. That one's in. Let's leave Shane on. Mr. Gibson seems like a good man. This is no offense, nothing personal against Mr. Gibson. I'm sure he's a wonderful father, probably a good uncle, granddaddy, probably even a great businessman, probably excellent. But we need to leave this one alone. Leave it alone. Just leave it alone. Ain't nothing wrong with it. Just leave it alone, man. He can still be a high-ranking PLP. Just leave it alone. You're listening to The Hit Back with Nahaja Black. When we come back, see Amy rejoins us, and I'll get rid of the hat. I really like the hat, but I'll get rid of the hat. We'll be back right after this.
We are working to protect our country, our people, and our livelihoods so that we can move forward. The vaccine is safe. The vaccine is easy. The vaccine is essential for our recovery. If we want to rebuild our economy, if we want to get back to our jobs, if we want to get back to our lives, our families, we must do this. Together.
Sugar, sugar, let's get sugary. Softer, smoother, and amazing skin. Oh, sugar, sugar, we're the sugar ladies. Giving you skin soft as a baby's. Goodbye, hair, we'll take good care of you.
Come visit us at Bahar Treat Spa on East Bay Street. Contact us at 323-6711. Or visit us online at www.baharetree.com.
You have a new text message from Scotia.
Scotiabank is adding text messaging to its communication channels to keep customers updated in quicker and safer ways. As of November 4th, Scotiabank will be using text messaging to provide notifications on the minimum payment required for your credit card and due dates. Customers may continue to access their credit card statements on Scotia Online or through our mobile banking app. Learn more by contacting customercare-bahamas@scotiabank.com or call 356-1697.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
It's the hit back with Nahaja Black.
And we're back. You're listening to The Hit Back with Nahaja Black. My good friend C.A. Nuri joins me. C.A., I had to take off the hat now, and I feel naked because it was keeping my head warm. But anyways, welcome, buddy.
I like the hat. I like the hat. It's a very Arrested Development type of concept, 1990s genre. I could see you inside it, rocking it.
I know, right? I thought it was something. I liked it.
It made you look young again, as if you were like 46, 47.
You know, okay. Hold on, let's try it one more time. I said, no, I really do like the hat. I mean, yeah, it looks like a Mountie.
I like it.
It looks like a Mountie. If you ever see the Canadian Mounties,
And it looks like it's pro Halloween also, as if the top was chopped off. No?
It's definitely pro Halloween.
It looks online. I gotta say, it does look good online. You're the girl. Yeah, man. That's nice.
Someone says, sounds like it's personal. He was found not guilty and you're still judging. See, you guys, that's when I know we're not having sensible conversation. Nothing's about being not guilty. That's not it. This is just all the way, all around. And that's just the last of things. But all around, you don't lose the people for one person. Don't lose the masses for one person. And this, I think, is just another strike where you get folks who were weary and leery to begin with the Dave. Martha say, stop lying to me. where folks were weary of the Davis administration, a Davis-led administration. And we do something like this that I believe really does affect the people. And I'm not going to apologize for saying it. It is what it is. I've said what I said. I don't think it's a wise move. And it would further confirm for folks their thoughts that it is the same old between either or all. Your thoughts here.
And Nahaja, your sentiment is amplifies what a number of behemoths are saying out loud and bashing and are concerned about. And my concern is that there should be persons within the party who are supposed to be able to analyze and say, okay, there's a problem here. But I believe the PLP is one of the smartest parties out there. These quote-unquote leaks are not necessarily leaks. I think they are purposely done. You notice that every time a controversial figure is about to be appointed,
they test it. I think so too.
It's a pair out of nowhere. No one knew Shane Gibson was being considered for any type of position. And all of a sudden, a leak going there and say it's possible. And then the emotions of the people tend to go out wild, and they watch the temperament to see how bad it is. And now they're able to pull back. You know, when you have that you know, when you had that, when you land in a plane and you must pull back up, you know, because the runway is not clear. I think that is exactly what the PLP is doing, actually. I think that is calculated. I think it's not a mistake. I think that they do this now to test to see how many behemoths have a problem with this for future appointments. I, in fact, believe that there will be scores of the old PLP regimes who will be returning back in the forefront. And I repeat that, scores.
Scores.
Yeah.
They're trying to come back.
They'll be appointed from governor general, deputy governor general, chairman of everything, come straight down. But in order to make sure this happened, they got to test the waters. So this is not a coincidence. I think that, okay, the hat distracted me now. I think that this is purposely done in order to test the temperament of the Bahamian public. And if the Bahamian public has an issue, has an angst, has a concern, has an uneasy feeling, I think that the PLP will be able to retract it, correct it, and say, man, we was playing. I know where to get that from. It was never being considered at all. You know,
if this had come through, Bahamas Press, or what is it? Now we have what it's called, Bahamas, all these, you know, these, you know, fringe spaces, then you would be like, meh, you just would ignore it. But Candia Dames are, which means that she will not print something where she is not well-sourced.
Yes.
Okay. So I believe that there is strategy to it. My first thought was they have to be testing this out. They have to be testing this out because this would be the most ridiculous thing you want to do. You haven't even had a house yet and a house sitting yet. You've not done anything substantive yet. Right. And, you know, because I I saw something happening in West End, Grand Bahama. That's the whole catastrophe, but we digress. I even bring that up today. I can let them bring it out themselves. I can just leave that right there. So, you know, I just don't, it would not work well for them. Shane Gibson needs to stay, they need to keep him somewhere else.
And one thing one must appreciate about the current sitting prime minister, he appreciates data in contrast to our last prime minister who completely ignored data. Mm-hmm. I think that our prime minister likes to know what is happening. Likes to know the temperament of the Bahamas, and he is a man of consensus. So I still believe it's strategic. I think it's strategic. I know he has an overarching game plan, and perhaps, and more than likely so, this was put out there for a test, right? Mm-hmm. For future announcements. Because like I said, they call these announcements legion, because there will be many.
someone asked a question, was Black, I guess you don't think Mother Pratt should be considered for Governor General. Actually, that's not my point of OPLP. Y'all see again, this is how I know we're in sickle plant era. This is when I know we're in my government in era and we ain't paying attention. Mother Pratt is a national treasure. Okay, Mother Pratt is not the same conversation as Mr. Shane Gibson.
She is not common at all.
No. So Mother Pratt should be Governor General. I applaud that. I don't know what's the deputy about right now. I don't know. Are we testing the waters or waiting for Mr. Smith to have his time? I don't know.
I believe he's having his time.
Yeah. So Mother Pratt being Governor General would be the only wise decision. Mother Pratt is Governor General. Man, that's my thing. Let's go Mother Pratt. Just like it was when Lady... Pinling was just beautiful. We loved it. You know, Dame Ivy Dumont, Arthur Fulton, these were wonderful. I have no
problem with National celebration.
No problem with these people, man. Mother Pratt could come back. Mother Pratt could run and all. I'd still support Mother Pratt.
She could run still and Barnabas, and we will support her.
Thanks. I know, right? I just so happy Mother Pratt around. Y'all don't mess with Mother Pratt. Mm-hmm. That's good people. So again, don't mix up the storyline, please. The issue is
perhaps the truth is that the PLP bench is not as deep as we consider. We actually think that they have a list of talented Bahamians that they can pick and sort through. Perhaps they are desperate in finding qualified people to help them govern. And this is why they are forced to bring back people from the old regime, because they have no talent in their bench. The bench is weak. Perhaps that is what it is, and that is why the likes of Shane Gibson, the likes of Jerome Fitzgerald, must come back to the fore, because they have no talent on their bench.
Oh, Lord, someone said Mother Pratt had her time, too. What you mean, Mother Pratt had her time? She's never been Governor General. Let Mother Pratt have a Governor General moment, man. This looks like a good thing. Naja, it is my personal view, and perhaps I'm in the minority, but all those persons who have served in their various boards and committees should not be appointed again. Other well-deserved and qualified supporters deserve a chance to be appointed at this time. I agree.
No.
to a certain degree, listen, I agree to a certain degree, because you make room so that the party grows. But I understand there is a place also for senior PL, for senior party members. Every government prior, and we can just go to the most recent, they appointed their board. It wasn't controversial. We kind of saw where it was going, and it is what it is. My issue with many of these boards are, though, that we don't get good. You know how many boards are overstepping what their space, their reach in some of these entities? A lot of these boards should not have the power that they have when you're talking about corporations. And those sort of structures ruin fully functioning or well-functioning entities. But I'm going beyond the scope of my conversation here. That's a show for another day, just for the record. But I do believe that, look, you can't talk about New Day, CA. I don't even think this is much of a debate. You cannot talk about New Day and bring some of the more questionable characters of an old day and of an old regime under a different leadership that we did not want when we voted out implicitly. We voted out Shane Gibson so much so we didn't even know the fellow we voted in. Okay? It took people in that community or Carmichael, was it Golden Gates? It took them about 4 weeks to figure out who who they voted in. And he had multiple billboards. It's some people in the first year still didn't know who they voted in Golden Gates. I had to drive by that billboard at least a solid 2 months to recognize who that was. By the way, I heard that Mr. Folks might be seeking to run for chairman, but we digress. Anyhow, I think that you have to start looking at saying, okay, but what does New Day mean? What does it mean? What does it mean? Does it mean that we are not, we've, because don't forget, the Progressive Liberal Party went through a mea culpa. They went through this process of cleansing and seeking to outrightly get themselves better. We refused to be, we got lost in the fray with the last administration. Now we're changing. We're changing our party's tenets, right? We're changing the Constitution. We're bringing in new faces. And yet the old ones was never far. And that's fine. But some faces you should know, and ain't met. Some faces we don't want to see in public anymore. You can just, we don't want to see them in the public sphere anymore. And unfortunately for Mr. Gibson, I think he's one of those faces. Jerome was pretty much one of those faces too, and he's in, but somehow we let it slide. But Shane, I don't think that's the one. And, you know, I'm just saying, I don't think this is wise for them.
But when you have such a large majority, Nahaja, you can do whatever you like.
So, isn't there a song?
Yeah, you song? Can do whatever you like. And they have a full five years, and let's shorten it. They have 3 years to offend the Bahamian public and the last two to make up for it. So if they truly want to have a Shane Gibson, and even though it might cause some frustration, some angst, they have 3 years, the Bahamian public has 3 years to get used to it, mm-hmm. right? And they have the last 2 years to make up for it and say, okay, I understand what you're saying. Let me show the proof in the pudding.
Yeah. You know, someone says, you're talking full CA, the PLP's bench is deep. I think so too. I cannot think, listen, these parties are deep, you know. What happens is that when you get to the lower rung, those levels of qualification, you got to get met. You got to get a meeting with so that you can be known. And I find that someone said something to me so interesting. FNM said, I've never seen my part. This is what an FNM said to me. One long-standing generational people. I didn't know you could be generational stuff, but apparently you could. Long-standing generational FNM said to me, I've never seen. Why would somebody call me during? That's only could be my mommy. She's do that. She's called me during my show.
For me.
She don't know I got a job. That'll be my moment. I just showed out on that. So longstanding FNM would say they've never seen the party so vicious, right? And you know what I said? And because, you know, and when they say that, that is in comparison because they didn't believe that they could be as vicious as the Progressive Liberal Party. And I think it's always interesting how you know, FNMs always believe that they're more superior. The whole crew is more superior than the Progressive Liberal Party, like their candidates, their voters. Somehow, apparently, BLP voters are bottom, and this is from that side, how they're viewed, right? It's as if this is some sort of classist party, and one is more educated than the other isn't. One is more vitriolic and the other isn't. And I said to them, I said, the reason why they're so much more divisive now, I believe, is because just as everywhere else, the pie has shrunk. The pie has changed the size. Whereas before, you probably say there was more affluent. You could have said that more affluent are voters. Now everybody fighting over the same chicken bone. And so now we're fighting to save our lives. We're fighting to eat. We're fighting to stay on the board. We're fighting to make sure and keep that contract. Everybody's vicious now. And so my point in all of that in saying is this. We talk about these parties, but at the end of the day, everybody just wants to eat, right? And politics is this game of, I need to eat. It's a game of feed me. And everybody and the rest of us who ain't in politics sitting here like, but buddy, I starving too. So the Progressive Liberal Party needs to show that they're not feeding theirs first.
And I love that analogy. I love that analogy, and I'll conclude with this. Perhaps Mr. Gibson needs to eat himself. Perhaps he didn't get enough food the last go-round, and he needs this go-round to get an extra piece of chicken. And who am I? Who am I to deny a man a piece of chicken if he's hungry, right? Allow the man to eat and get some shingles. I mean, to get some benefits from from this go around, right? Mm. It was a rough go around the last 4 years, right? So if we can assist the good gentleman and helping him make some money on the side, we should do our Christian duty to make sure that he gets a big slice of the pie.
Our Christian duty. You can talk, Julia. You know, I always bring this up a lot. I'm just tuning in. CN, you're rejoining me. We're talking about the article by Candia Dames today, stating that there is the notion, right, or the idea of bringing in Mr. Shane Gibson, and the reaction by the general populace. And I think mine too. My reaction was, no, come on now. We dig into this going too far. You just can't even. What am I supposed to say today, Cecil, about this? Other than like, you're waiting to give the party some time. You know, you're waiting to give this government some time. You're trying to give them some time, but you can't do this twice. You done lost your mind. But anyways, can you just get to the end of the week? Say something substantive. Give me some hope that y'all actually on, like, got something going. Give me some hope, right? But then this comes out. I just don't know. I just might. Machiavelli, and I always bring this up, The Prince, when Machiavelli wrote The Prince, one of the greatest takeaways of Machiavelli's writing, his political writings, whilst at some point being a captive, when he wrote political writings to the prince at the time, he talked about a king without walls, a kingdom without walls. And he said that the greatest king is the one that did not need walls. The one that was most at risk was the one with walls. Why? Because the king without walls means that all of his subjects would defend him because he was benevolent. The king without walls is able to say that my subjects within the fields were fed as just as well as those who were in the palace, or if not as well, they were not starving or dying. But the king that needs a wall needs to be protected by the gods inside. And at some point, his subjects will overthrow him because of the disparities in how we treat people. And if that is not a lesson learned by the Free National Movement leader, Dr. Minister, is crying at your church service because now he's being cannibalized even in his own party. The factions have said, King, you definitely need walls. You need a dome. You need protection all around because we are out for you. That is quality leadership. And what we cannot have happen as a people is for this constant moving of pieces and a government that wants to lose. You understand how early this is for this administration to lose its way? No, boss, we need to reel you in. This is the job of the media. I don't even have time for you to go astray. I can't sit here and watch. You need to get it together. I literally have assets that need to stay in a stable economy, Cecil. I got fixed assets. It ain't liquid. This economy needs to shape up. You understand what I'm saying? Okay. Your thoughts before we go to break.
I agree with you. And it tells the tale of the temperament of the Bahamian people. I think Philip Davis, our prime minister, is a man of data. I think that this was done in order to get data. And I think that he will respond in kind to the data. Now, if he responds contrary and still make space for Shane Gibson and the like, right? It shows that he doesn't care about the data, right? Mm-hmm. And that this is going to be a long 5 years because he's making some tough decision that benefits his party over nation.
Yeah, and you know something someone said to me, I hope that Prime Minister Davis is strong enough to say no to the heavyweight's demands. And that was said to me at the beginning because the question was the size of government, right? We have a huge, this is a big government. This is a big cabinet, right? With a lot of pal sex, a lot of, you know, everybody all over the place. We got all kinds of ministers and whatnot. Is he able to handle saying no? And that is where I wonder if you're sitting, David, to dinner with Frankie Wilson, and Frankie say, listen, I need you to put your head in. You can't say no?
No, you can't say no.
Can't say no to Frankie?
No. That's for Frankie.
Someone said, bring him back. He is good. Bring him back. He is good for BTC. Good unionist. Okay. Why doesn't BTC just hire him?
That's like an oxymoron. How could you have a government be a unionist at the same time? You
know, but why doesn't BTC make sense? Let BTC just hire him if he's so good. Let BTC hire him.
Or go back and be the union leader. You know, it doesn't make no sense.
Nahaj, I believe every former candidate that has been voted out of power should never hold a government position because the people rejected them. It is our culture to keep recycling the same old people from losing an election to the Senate, to chairmen, to ambassadorships, etc. They should not be getting any more from the public purse.
No, I disagree with that.
I could be wrong here. I remember I used to drive through Pinewood all the time. I remember when Alison Maynard was the member of parliament, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember driving through Pinewood all the time to go home when we live, you know. And I say, oh man, this is an MP. This is a good MP. This is before I cared about politics. And she sure got voted out. After all of the baseball park and a roundabout and the first one to congratulate sports fans, you know, our athletes. The first one to show support because Superman Sands, right? Superman Sands, the triple jumper, you know, our guy. So she was the first one to put up a billboard. And I was like, this is a good MP. Boy, she got voted out. Now, mind you, she might have been good anywhere else, but she was a good MP. My point is, some MPs might be good and get caught out of the wave. Like, there's some good MPs. Well, I think most who were left. I still like Michael Pintard. I'm happy he stayed. I still like Shannon Dawn Cartwright. I'm happy he stayed. But if they'd left, should they not be allowed to come back in? They did well. And there are some who just get caught up in the wave of our dislike for the leader. And I think that is one of those things we need to change, where the leader of the party is someone we vote for separate from the candidates. And so that you were able to say, you know, we're done away with. We're done away with that person, that mindset. But anyways, we'll take a quick break. Go ahead. No. Finish your thought.
No, I wanted to say that Miss Maynard Gibson was voted out and came back as a senator when she lost her position and became one of the better attorney generals of the Bahamas as a senator or as a defeated candidate. So there's a reason to bring back talented people. Like you said, she was talented. They brought her back and they brought her back to be a minister from the Senate. And she did an awesome job.
Mm-hmm. Someone says, Nahaja, you are being extremely opinionated, very shallow in your thinking. Don't be so dismissive. Well, I am a talk show host.
You're just shallow.
I might be shallow, though.
And dismissive.
But opinionated and shallow.
And dismissive.
It is what it is. All right, we'll take a quick break. You're listening to The Hit Bag with Nahaja Black, Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. We got more stories with you. And then joining us at 5 o'clock will, of course, be our good friend, Dr. Chris Curry. We'll be back right after this.
We are working to protect our country, our people, and our livelihoods so that we can move forward. The vaccine is safe. The vaccine is easy. The vaccine is essential for our recovery. If we want to rebuild our economy, if we want to get back to our jobs, if we want to get back to our lives, our families, we must do this together.
You have a new text message from Scotia.
Scotiabank is adding text messaging to its communication channels to keep customers updated in quicker and safer ways. As of November 4th, Scotiabank will be using text messaging to provide notifications on the minimum payment required for your credit card and due dates. Customers may continue to access their credit card statements on Scotia Online or through our mobile banking app. Learn more by contacting customercare-bahamas at scotiabank.com or call 356-1697.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
You're listening to the Hit Back with Nahaja Black, Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I got some good friends joining me. Of course, everybody knows my good friend, C.A. Nuri, and Dr. Chris Curry, who is frozen, I guess, because his face was deaf, and I could see his face, but boy, I don't see him anymore. So hopefully we get Chris Curry back. C.A., welcome back to the show. Good to have you on. What you say, buddy?
It's always good that you brought my cousin Chris on. You know?
Yeah, man, you look so much alike. First cousins, right?
Yes, like identical.
Our family diverse. Our family just diverse. That all that means. You know? We're like good cousin.
It's good to see Chris. Chris, welcome to the show, man. It's good to have you on.
It's good to be here with my brother from a different mother. And with you, of course,
definitely.
My friend from a different end. Thank you very much, Nahaja.
That sound weird. That friend from a different end thing. I know about that one. You know?
I had a visual.
I didn't come over it.
I was just trying to find a word that rhymed, okay? Maybe that was a fail.
Listen, okay. Now, we'll work on it. So we give you credence for being the real doctor on set. Right, we're giving the credence for being the real scholar on set. Everyone, welcome back to the Hit Back with Nahaja Black, Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Hope you guys are doing well, taking care of yourself, living your best life. All right, Chris, before we change gears, actually, we got to change gears, right? So before we change gears, I wanted to get your thoughts real quick. Nah, I'm ready to move on from that topic, honestly. I want to ask, now let's go to this, all right? So this weekend, the Free National Movement celebrated their 50th anniversary. And I thought it was a good, I mean, listen, as any political party to be around 50 years, not only that, but to have won government, has been able to, as a political party, you know, come up and win after so many tries, right? After so many terms of the Progressive Liberal Party, led by Sir Lyndon Oscar Pendleton at the time, that they've been a formidable foe. They've been a formidable opposition to a strong party like the PLP. Historically, Chris, when you think about political parties in the space of, and in particular, the Free National Movement, historically, where would you put them?
Well, I think arguably we would not have the political system we have without the FNM. One could argue that with dissenting politics, remember the FNM grew out of the dissident eight that then became the Free PLP. And depending on who you ask, they would say there was a merger or union of sorts, maybe a marriage of convenience with the dismantled UBP. However you want to describe it or frame it, by October of 1971, you have a new rival, because truth be told, the Free PLP and the dissident eight, they couldn't win a large base of support. They lacked the financing and they lacked the name recognition. And so I kind of like to see it as a marriage of convenience. A lot of people, and even FNMs, don't like to hear the fact that there were negotiations, and we know this from the meetings that took place in October of that year. And actually, the meetings had started earlier from January of 1971, from my own research work, which I'm working on now. And so there were negotiations with Jeffrey Johnstone. There were negotiations with Roland Simonet. There were some negotiations going on behind the scenes that led to that formation on October 21st, 1971. And so I think historically, they are an important party. What's fascinating is they lost so many times before they finally won. They lost in 72, 77, 82, 87, before winning in 92. And what's fascinating, in 77, they lost so bad, they weren't even the official opposition. The BDP, which had broke away from the FNM, actually became the official opposition. So they had some real lean years. They had some really difficult moments in their political history. And they've survived. And I will also add, they will survive this beatdown as well.
You want to say it like that, this beatdown? You have to say it like that, Chris, this beatdown. All right. So, of course, yesterday's church service had the highlight of it, of course. But I don't know if you call it a highlight, because I thought the bishop's message was fiery as well, which I thought was very good. And I appreciated that he held no punches back in speaking about humility and how we must not rush to power, but rush to service, in essence, was the preacher's sermon. And I thought that was very strong there. But we also had, of course, the prime minister's story. Not a story, but him showing emotion and saying, you know, he wished, you know, to serve again in another capacity. Everyone is now asking, you know, is what the prime minister did, what he said, was his words genuine? Is this forgiveness something that we can give or extend to the prime minister as he's asked for forgiveness? Was that to the general public? Was it to to just Free National Movement members? Who was this for? But let's watch this clip here.
I will continue to serve in the House of Assembly. As the Member of Parliament for Killarney. I again thank the constituents of Killarney for their support. Since 2007 and during the recent general election, as a former prime minister and whatever role is assigned to me, I will support the work of the opposition. To advocate on behalf of the Bahamian people and to hold the government accountable. It has been an extraordinary privilege to serve our country as Prime Minister. And as Member of Parliament, I thank the Bahamian people and the members of the Free National Movement for their support. And the encouragement.
All right, guys, what were your thoughts on that? You know, not being, in essence, mea culpa, the forgiveness aspect of it. What are your thoughts on it? Did you think the former prime minister was sincere with his apology? And does it even matter if he was sincere with his apology? I'll go with you. Chris, you go first.
Well, there's a popular song out there about it's too late for sorry.
It's too late to apologize.
Yeah. Thank you. I don't want to misquote that song. But I don't know. I don't know if it's too late. But I wonder. It's interesting that he seemed very emotional on Sunday. Perhaps it was the emotion from the firebrand sermon that had just been preached. It's interesting that he apologizes at the end of a church service rather than, you know, in the House of Assembly. Or I would have added that the best place for him would have been if he could have conceded defeat publicly on the night of the election, which he didn't, as we know, is a tradition in our country and most democracies when you have a transition of power. He didn't do that. He sent a little letter and he made a private phone call, but he was nowhere to be seen in FNM headquarters to admit defeat. And maybe apologizing then would have been good. Having said that, I don't think you ever want to discount someone's apology, and we can't question its sincerity. I also felt, you know, maybe he's finally getting to the place of acknowledging the defeat. You know, you may say that's weird because it's been a whole month, but sometimes it takes people a long time to process what has happened. And, you know, in the 12-step program that we know with Alcoholics Anonymous, they always say the first step is admitting that you have a problem. So maybe this is a first step in reconciling with the party, reconciling with the nation, accepting defeat, and now transitioning to be a loyal member of Her Majesty's opposition and understanding that he has a new role to play as the MP for Killarney within the FNM organization.
Yeah. CA, your thoughts?
The former prime minister is now a senior politician. He understands strategy. He understands the skullduggery, the connivingness that goes with politics. He was able to survive the cloak and dagger and intrigue within the FNM party. And he did pretty well, right? He understands the system. I think that apology goes two prongs. It was an apology to the FNM party, which there is a disconnect there, an obvious disconnect, and an apology to the Bohemian people at large, right? I think that he wants to start from a do-over. You know, when you reset, this is a great reset for the party to move forward, right? With his apology, it allows wiggle room for the new leader of the FNM to come out without having the burden of the history of Minnis, right? Mind you, the burden will still be there, but he can say and blame Minnis. So that's the former regime. We are separate. And we saw that Philip Davis did the same thing. That was not me. That was Perry Christie regime, and I'm a new leader, new concepts, whatever it is. And for the FNM itself, right, we see that there was a crack within their governance where it seems that if the leader, Minnis, Hubert Minnis, had a different agenda, different viewpoint, different angle of where the rest of the FNM wanted to go. And until recently, a number of behemoths thought that he was still going to run, that he's going to wait last minute and challenge and more likely win on the ground from the MGM. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think that this apology, this acknowledgement that he will not run came right after, coincidentally, when the former prime minister, Hubert Ingraham, said, hook or crook, he ain't going back.
I mean, it's as clear as day.
And then put down the rules by the 18th. He would have to announce if he's going to run or not. And I'm not sure if Minnis had a plan to announce on the 18th that he did apply a plan to run. And if he had gone through that and announced it, I think that the FNM would have gone into some type of civil war where you see all the dirty laundry come out. Because now whoever had ambition had no other choice now but to fight and fight with all their might. And I think that they didn't want that open war that everybody can watch right before a convention. And I think that this is all of the panel because of it.
Yeah, I think the former prime minister's apology, you can't judge whether the sincerity was there or not, right? He was emotional, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, he got verklempt, you know. I said, Greek. He got verklempt, right? So it did hit him. Now, the question is, and it's someone, Jada made it, he's emotional because he lost favor with his party. He should address the Bahamian people, not his supporters. And honestly, I wonder if, that's my thought. My thought is, okay, because the prime minister has been emotional before, you know, the former prime minister, Hubert Minnis, he's been emotional before. It was during the, which hurricane was it for, where he cried for the citizens? Dominica? That's
Dominica, yes. When they were devastated and the whole island was flat.
Yeah. Right. And he
bawled like a baby.
I mean, that bawling like a baby's extra, but he did share some tear, and I heard that there was a lot more moisture then than it was for this. But you know, he was a little, you know, more moist, Dominica. But he has shown emotion before, and so my thing is though, and you don't know, I've never met Dr. Minnis. I don't know him personally. So I don't know how he behaves in terms of interactions with other things. My only thing is at this point, is he crying or is he emotional because he is no longer, even without the option, because he realized now his party itself has put the reins on him to do it again. Like it is now an awareness. That buddy, we don't want you to do this anymore. It's like you've lost all of your leverage and your power. So is it that sadness for that? Or is it the sadness because like he's never admitted I made mistakes that or made decisions, because you had 4.5 years of those mistakes and those decisions. At some point, when you ask for forgiveness, is it a repentance? Is it where we are turning away from our behavior, learning from our mistakes, and then making adjustments? You've had 4.5 years of people crying out. And you said at one point in your speech, I think one time in the House, he did say, you know, if I've made some missteps. I think you remember that in a part of his position earlier. He said, I made some missteps. But that's fine. And that when that is a recognition. Now with a recognition, we begin to change. We can ask, did the prime minister change from his recognition? So then when I look at that, that prior behavior doesn't lead me to believe yet that that recognition will lead to substantive change. Perhaps now this recognition and asking for forgiveness may come with a full form repentance, but is this now coming because there is no more ground for or a road for opportunity? Is this a sadness of the devastation of your loss and not of the work that you've done towards others? So that's why I don't know where it lands in this conversation.
It's an interesting scenario. And I think we have to look at this maybe from a philosophical and theological perspective, because we hear godly sorrow brings about repentance. True repentance is a change of heart that leads to a change in behavior, a change in action. You're going down Soldier Road and you realize that you were going in the wrong direction. You have to turn your car around and head in the opposite direction. That's an example of what we're talking about here. Godly repentance leads to change in mind, which translates to change in behavior. We don't know if that was godly repentance. What we do know is some people repent, but the repentance is shallowed by the fact that they were really more upset about being caught in whatever crime or thing that they did that was wrong. So that's not really true repentance, because you're just asking forgiveness, or you're asking for people to understand you, not because you really mean it, but because you're just mad that you got caught. And so I wonder with him, is this godly sorrow where we see a true manifestation of change in his behavior, or is this just an apology coming out of a point or a place where he realized that he's lost? And this is it. And he's kind of like been exposed for who he is. And so it's like a kid getting caught in the cookie jar and more upset about, you know, getting caught than actually what he did. So that, I think, you know, only the passage of time will really see which one it is. And we have to see it in his deeds, right? I mean, what will happen is when he gets in the House of Assembly, how will he behave? Is when he gets a microphone put in front of him, is going to carry on with the same arrogance that he had before, where he dismisses questions and people from the media? Or is he going to answer the questions? Is he going to be responsive to his Killarney constituency? Is he going to continue the way he was, or is he going to change and be different?
Yeah, Iran said he cried because he lost the title of competent authority. Y'all ain't saved. That wasn't saved.
Nahaja, I think I would be remiss not to mention that Dr. Minnis would be just a regular MP when he returns to the House of Assembly. His apology, his repentance, and I use that word now, his repentance is neither here nor there, mm-hmm. right? Because he would have a different role. Mm-hmm. There's no need for him to change from being arrogant, because his role may dictate that he needs to be,
yeah.
right? Because we know that he's a fairly decent MP in Killarney, right? The people will more likely support him there because he has a good machinery there. He hasn't done anything particularly wrong in that constituency, right? Mm-hmm. So when he returns as that, he just need to continue to do what he does in that particular constituency and perhaps raise his profile, but he will be adequate enough and there's no need for any repentance in general. Moving mm-hmm. forward, all the burden will be based on the new leader of the FNM, whether they can pacify all the various factions within the FNM and whether they can keep the role of leader for the next 4 to 5 years. I think that is the more pertinent issue right now, as what will the new FNM look like moving forward? Because that FNM, the FNM will now adopt the characteristic, the character of the new leader. And by history, we see that the FNM as a party tends to adopt the mannerism of their leader. and follow that train or track towards the election and the temperament of the party. So whoever becomes the leader, that's how that reflection of the afternoon will be shown.
Yeah, and I think, you know, with that in mind, something was interesting, you know. I was listening to Dwight this morning, right, Dwight and Pam, and Pam was saying, listen, but it's up to us. And I agree with Pam on this. It's up to us to move on from it, right? For us to move on from it, but we don't forget. And I think that election cycles, we tend to forget. Every election cycle, we come down and we go, that's how can we go back and forth, right? It's a back and forth thing. And I think also because of options. I look at the options presented before you and you say, okay, what do we want to do? A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And then you come back to where you're probably stuck with A and B. So I just think that all that's said and done, we are going to have to determine how we receive it. I don't even know if that apology was for the Bahamian people at large, or I think it was for the Free National Movement. I think it's for the persons in the room. But I will say that, maybe, let's go with that. It's for us at large. I think we need a deeper one, right? An understanding of what went wrong. And I hope that the Free National Movement as a party, though, as it seeks to hire and get a new leader, don't just believe that it was Dr. Minnis, that was solely the reason for their demise. Because really, only two members really stayed on. Right? Mm-hmm. And that showed that individually, we vote, it was only two, right? No, three. Iram Lewis, Marco City, which is Michael Pintard, and Shannon Dawn Cartwright. I think they were the only three incumbents who kept
us. Adrian Gibson was an incumbent as well.
Yes.
Long Island. Long Island, right? So they were vote, and this shows you and Kalani. Totally forgot Kalani. And we know that Long Island always votes red, and Kalani will vote red. Shannon Dawn worked for his seat. So we will keep people who work for their seats, you know. I was surprised with Iram Lewis, but okay, let's go with that. Marco City worked for his seat. So we are still capable of voting in people who work for their seats. So I think that there is something to be said where if you are a good member of parliament, you might have a good chance to stay in your seat. And so it just can't be that, okay, we look at it as Dr. Minnis was the major issue. Because the arrogance that was displayed by Dr. Minnis filtered down all the way to every member of parliament, except for a few, except for Shannon Dawn, except for Marco City. Now, I don't know the rest. I can stick with those two. And it didn't filter down. That culture was pervasive. So are we saying that culture will be changed with the new leadership? Is it an ideology of the Free National Movement that folks were upset about or against? All of these things are considerations that I hope that the Free National Movement does consider as they look forward into the future and not just say, oh, well, it was Minnis. We finished with Minnis now. We good. Let's vote for FNM because it ain't Minnis. I think that's a whole other kettle of fish. And I think the Bahamian people are looking for, well, listen, right now, we just got to stop. We just start with this crew, 5 years. You let them go, run their race. Let them run their race and don't call an early election because you'll end up like, you might end up like Dr. Minnis in the long run. All right, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to switch gears. Investment, the investment Minister of Investment and Tourism, Chester Cooper is talking about, Chris NCA, more business with the Chinese. I want to get your thoughts on that. And I think it's very interesting. I like this. This conversation. I want to know where do we stand with business with China? And, we know the PLP like business with China. But we'll be back right after this. You're listening to The Hit Back with Nahaja Black, Guardian Radio 96.9 FM.
We are working to protect our country, our people, and our livelihoods so that we can move forward. The vaccine is safe. The vaccine is easy. The vaccine is essential for our recovery. If we want to rebuild our economy, if we want to get back to our jobs, if we want to get back to our lives, our families, we must do this together.
Throughout our lifetime, we must all make decisions. No matter how we choose, the right one just needs to be made. Like having J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers as your insurance partner. We've been serving the Bahamas for over 100 years. Whether you need home, motor, marine, or commercial insurance, make the right decision. Call 397-2100 or visit jsjohnson.com.
J.S. Johnson Insurance.
You have a new text message from Scotia.
Scotiabank is adding text messaging to its communication channels to keep customers updated in quicker and safer ways. As of November 4th, Scotiabank will be using text messaging to provide notifications on the minimum payment required for your credit card and due dates. Customers may continue to access their credit card statements on Scotia Online or through our mobile banking app. Learn more by contacting customercare-bahamas at scotiabank.com or call 356-1697.
Baja sugar, sugar, let's get sugary. Softer, smoother, and amazing skin. Oh, Baja sugar, sugar, we're the sugar ladies. Giving you skin soft as a baby's. Goodbye hair, we'll take good care of you.
Come visit us at Baja Retreat Spa on East Bay Street. Contact us at 323-6711 or visit us online at www.baharetree.com.
To those affected by a hurricane, the damage is far greater than the eye can see. It's the pain of experiencing damage to your home. But there are people right here that can help. We're CG Atlantic General. We're your neighbors. We live here and work here too. We're always ready to answer calls and to process your claims as quickly as possible. So when a storm turns your life upside down, we're here to turn it around. CG Atlantic General. Good like that. Security and General Insurance Company Limited, trading as CG Atlantic General. Contact a CG Atlantic General broker today.
We are working to protect our country, our people, and our livelihoods so that we can move forward. The vaccine is safe. The vaccine is easy. The vaccine is essential for our recovery. If we want to rebuild our economy, if we want to get back to our jobs, if we want to get back to our lives, our families, we must do this together.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
You're listening to The Hit Back with Nahaja Black, Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I got my good friend C.A. Anuri joining me, Dr. Chris Curry also joining me on the show today. We covered some good topics so far, lively discussion, of course. My good friend C.A. always with me on Mondays and Fridays. I might miss you this week, this Friday, C.A. This is a personal discussion, no need for on-air banter. And Dr. Chris Curry, of course, one of my now, I call him my dear friends. I've never had dinner with he and his wife, my husband and I, he and his wife. I figured we could call it the times of COVID. We could call it that, Chris. We could call it that. Yeah.
Absolutely. We can do it.
All right. So, all right, guys. Here we have now the Minister of Investment, the Deputy Prime Minister, now the Minister of Investment and Tourism, Mr. Chester Cooper, Tourism and Aviation, Chester Cooper, has... An article was written today and by Chester Robarts, here at The Guardian, talking about the minister opening up the dialogue, saying, listen, we want to bring in more. We want to, you know, have a better relationship with China in terms of investments. Perhaps some PPPs. Is it? No, not PPPs. Yes, some PPPs, infrastructure investments, some more, you know, just investments in general. Talked about tourism, right? Vacation rentals. I was like, okay, hold on. Okay, first thought that crossed my mind was, where is that booklet for the Blueprint for Change? I was trying to find my Blueprint for Change booklet so bad. I don't recall, Chris, was that in the booklet?
What I saw in the booklet was more about they had this domestic investment board, right? And that was supposed to be the spark plug for creating Bahamian-based entrepreneurship businesses, domestic tourism, boutique resorts owned and operated by Bahamians. So it seems at first glance a bit of an off point from the plan. But I would think, you know, the idea in principle isn't so offensive as long as you have guardrails to determine how those investment plans are going to look. And what I mean by that is if the Honorable Minister means that the Chinese are going to invest in Bahamian boutique resorts, invest in Bahamian businesses as a silent partner in the public-private partnership scenario where they provide the financing for fronting a Bahamian business to allow the Bahamian business to grow, then I'm okay with that.
What are the issues?
You know what we're touchy-feely about is anything to do with land, right? Or anything to do with tourism.
Andros,
especially north. So the point is we have some touchy-feely things that you just can't mess with.
I feel like
a natural resources, let's throw that in there as well. So the point here is I think you have to be careful with these kind of investment opportunities. Yes, we need foreign direct investment, but what we don't want is foreign direct investment where we develop mega resorts that are owned and operated by foreigners, where all the wealth is generated and is extracted so that it doesn't benefit the Bahamian economy. What we want is investments that percolate and are recycled within the economy. Alfred Sears was saying this on the campaign trail. I think he did a great job of saying our economy and our economic plan is looking inwardly instead of outwardly. So everything has to be turned towards the Bahamian rather than turned outwards to the foreigner. That's what we need.
Listen, you hit all kind of words there. Preach, C.A. Nuri.
We need U.S. dollars. We need U.S. dollars like from yesterday.
U.S.
And
dollars.
The only way to get the U.S. dollars? To pay our international bills and commitments so we don't get no devaluation, have that kind of talk. We need foreign and direct investment to come to the Bahamas. The Chinese are prepared to invest. They have the money. We are seeking every and anybody to entertain conversations to have that type of investment come to the Bahamas. We see that the Chinese are interested in tourism. The Chinese are interested in farming. And the Chinese are interested in fishery. Now, we need to find a way that we can partner with them to see how it benefits us and benefit them, right? We know that farming in the Bahamas is labor intensive, right? Mm-hmm. We have immigrants working in our farms, paying them $220 a week to farm. Whereas in China and in the United States, they have machines who could do the work of 300 laborers and one machine during the work of 300 laborers. We need to find a way how to get these machinery to the Bahamas that we're able to produce enough for ourselves. And the only way to do that is to start partnering with some of these people. The same thing with tourism. Bay Street don't look pretty well. I could call it some words. I could call it Bay Street some words, right? Some choice words I could call it Bay Street, right? We've been talking about Bay Street for now about 30 years, that it looked bad. We've been begging Bahamians to invest in Bay Street for years, telling them that it looked bad. We've been asking the government to do some work on Bay Street for years, going on 25 to 30 years, right? But we know that the Chinese with The Point, the Chinese with British Colonial Hotel, we see the Americans with the embassy, we see this foreign entity who building the cruise port. They are prepared to change Bay Street altogether. Right. And if they are prepared and we have a master plan, that's the only problem they have. I don't know what the master plan is. What is the look that we are going for Bay Street to say, well, yes, we need help in this particular area. I do not know it, but I'm prepared to entertain any conversation with the Chinese in particular, with the Canadians, the Americans, the French, the Italians, the Haitians, the Jamaicans. We know the Jamaicans come here and invest in all kind of hotels. They like our hotel product. And they continue to invest, just that we haven't reached a point where Bahamians are investing in our economy. And so until then, if we get more Jamaicans and Haitians who want to invest in the Bahamas, I say welcome them with open arms. and give them our master plan and say, where can we fit you in all of this?
I hear what you're saying, CA. I agree at some aspect, and
I'll
tell
you where. Let Bay Street continue to look like how it looked.
But can you, let me finish. Okay, now, Chris Curry said, guardrails, right? You can't, one of the challenges we have, and Chris, you hit the nail on the head. One of the big things was that in the blueprint, domestic, inward-looking growth to create an outward trajectory, right? So how do we empower Bahamians? How do we foster economic growth locally? But what CA is saying also is that I think there is a dual side to this. Whilst we are growing inwardly, there is still a need for FDI. FDI, though, must be specific to our own policy of exponential growth. FDI doesn't mean you have money, do what you want. What we know about historically, okay, this is historically about the investment behavior of the Chinese, historically, is that many are just capitalistic. You can have mangroves, they'll cut that right out. They don't care about no mangroves and saving no forests. Fish, we need to feed everybody. We will drag net all you see, and God help you. Okay? What do we know? Now, there's good business that we've done with the Chinese. Good business. Bahamas still is the only one that was really it here now. I mean, it definitely is a big white elephant, but it's here now. Before
thank God, was scared, imagine if it was in here, eh?
But listen, you remember when it wasn't almost here? And that's how come the PLP wasn't here? Foreign direct investment must be a part of our economic growth strategy in its purpose for the Bahamian accelerated growth. Okay? The Bahamian accelerated growth means that FDI should be number one. The number one thing is the FDI complements your entire vision. And yeah. If when you talk about vacation rentals, Bahamians, the reason why we can't be owners of our stake is because we still can't afford a house. We can't afford a duplex. We can't afford a triplex. What is the plan to get us to afford it? Now, if you say that, hey, FDI, we're going to invest, we're going to get 3 or 4 major investments, and these FDI investments, our goal from this brings a certain percentage of growth, which we will funnel into these areas of housing so that Bahamians now can own the tourism industry. We are looking with foreign direct investment to get. Why is it just the Chinese? I've asked this question many times. We are a Black-led nation in a, right next door to the United States that is struggling with its Blackness. But they've got multi-millionaires, billionaires who are Black. Just why we don't have a try to market on that alone? You could be Black and your life would matter. Why don't you invest here? Why are we not trying to get more Black-owned Black millionaires or those who are colored to invest as foreign direct investors? We look at just the continent, but China invests with intention. China is not a haphazard investor. China invests to continue its world domination conquest, to make sure that its citizenry and its wealth increases. They don't do this to make us happy. You know, there's one Chinese could buy the whole national debt. One Chinese. So we have to be, as a country, very strategic. And what I heard from Mr. Cooper was that, okay, we're open. We want to do business. I didn't hear, though, what are the guardrails for businesses? What type of businesses are we looking for, right? What, in terms of how much money do we need in terms of foreign direct investment from anyone? And how will we leverage ourselves? Will we find ourselves where it's just like Bahama, it is too big to fail? You know, when Bahama was said to be failing, we did some weird stuff to get that back up and running. International press was already talking about this white elephant. Literally, it was white. Thank God, sitting there empty and vacant. You have the whole point strip, right? So we're not lacking Chinese investment. So I thought that was the first thing. We're not lacking in Chinese investors. If we're saying now we need more Chinese investors, I'm curious as to why China, just as, you know, why anywhere else, opening up travel? I don't mind this. I believe that anyway, our market share is small. We're a small country. We need more human beings in country to really talk about exponential growth. Because, I mean, you look at places like Singapore, our domestic market is too small. And I've always believed that we need more people in the country. But what we haven't done was begin to really empower us. We don't even know how to truly export our businesses overseas. But we're talking about bringing other advanced countries in country to take advantage of our lack of knowledge, our lack of flexibility. We're not nimble enough as a society economically. And those who have welcome these sort of investments, welcome these sort of opportunities where the rest of us are sitting on the sideline watching and waiting to be labor. So I'm curious as to how this all works into their Blueprint for Change manifesto so that the everyday man will benefit from it. And regardless of government, it must make sense for all of us. And we should be walking through this with them.
Chris? You know, Nahasha, a couple of thoughts I had as you were speaking. First of all, it's sort of paradoxical that Chinese is such a capitalistic nation, given that they're a communist country, you know? but I think it's true, at least in their operations outside of China and their investment strategies in the West, in the Western Hemisphere, they certainly seem capitalistic. The second thought I have is, you know, they have a proven track record in the Bahamas. You mentioned Bahamar, but let's not forget the stadium. And let's not forget the I believe they also did the beautiful highway between the airport, what we call John F. Kennedy, right? That
they
road.
Really?
Yeah, and that's the best road to drive on in any part of New Providence or the Bahamas. Tell me there's a better road to drive on than that one. Nope. I mean, you have Lake Cunningham on one side, and you have Fusion and the cliff of and Ridge of Gladstone on the other side. It's just a beautiful drive. That's the best drive we got, without a pothole, I should say. But anyhow, I digress. The point here is the deliverables are there. And so people like the comfort of knowing that you're dealing with a country and a group of investors who you know that have delivered in the past. And you know what you don't want right now in a contracted economy, which we've had for about two decades, you don't want to have to deal with an investor that you're not sure of, mm-hmm. or a project that you're not sure is going to be completed. Right now, we know Bahamar, we had that problem. We had to go all the way to Delaware to get them sorted out. But the problem was resolved and Bahamar was delivered. All right. Maybe it was,
it was delivered.
It was delivered. There were some birth pains for that, some labor pains, I should say. But anyhow, the point is some serious labor pains. But the point is, I think there's something to be said about that kind of investment. And then the last point I want to make is, you know, sometimes we forget that we actually have an indigenous Chinese population in the Bahamas outside of a foreign direct investor. You know, Chinese have been coming in the Bahamas since the 1890s from Cuba. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so a lot of the mom and pop shops that we talk about.
They call them Bahamians though, man. They're the Chinese
Bahamian.
Yeah. So, and I'm with you on that, Chris. And I think that, look, We have to, there's a point where our discussions must be, or our ability to discuss foreign direct investment must come from a place where there's no insecurity. Where the insecurity comes from in discussing foreign direct investment is that the foreign direct investment system and the foreign direct investor gets the benefits where the rest of Bahamians find themselves just lacking and not getting these sort of investments. We are always on the outside looking in. Things happen to us, not with us, not by us. So they happen to us. And we are designated as labor. We are the labor of the country, and only the politicians at the top can get the contract. You know, it's all this foolishness, the skullduggery that goes on with big deals in this country. So where I am now is, though, we already have, and not every Chinese business is a good steward, just like not every American country is a good steward, but we have a lot of large Chinese investment issues. We could go right to the port in Grand Bahama, right? Hutchison Whampoa, we give them all of that land. They're one of the things in the agreement was they built a hotel, the Grand Lucayan. Well, you know what happened with that, okay? Okay, we end up owning it again, and it was a bad deal, but we digress. And then you look at the airport in Grand Bahama. They own that, but now we own it again. And ain't nothing there. I mean, at some point, we got to make sure these folks actually want to do business here and not just acquire space. we need real investors. So what is the level of interconnectivity between the investment and the behemoth itself so that this thing cannot just be left to die? We cannot just have an abandoned hotel. We need more boutique investments, like you mentioned, Chris. If you're going to do that, boutique investment, behemoths have to own 51%, 55%, and invest silently, right? But we now need to get to a place where FDI isn't just where you need land. We got land. We need 3,000 jobs. VL for Grace A, we only need 4,000 jobs, man. Are you straight? Because that's apparently all we are is labor. And it ain't enough of us. And it ain't enough jobs. So I think that there has to be, I was taken aback by it, but I also know we need FDI. So I was just taken aback by this whole conversation when I didn't see that in the blueprint. I didn't see that in the blueprint.
And I understand your angst and concern. I'm not dismissing that, right? I understand the need to develop and to expand our local bohemian cottage industries and have local partnership with even international firms. But as you know, we are in debt. We are in debt and we are in some straits that we should be concerned with. And I think that the minister acknowledges that and is trying to get US dollars into the country as quick as possible. And what his announcement is not necessarily that agreement has been made, but that we are setting up platforms that we are able to speak to these foreign direct investors, particularly the Chinese, and give them a platform on what are we prepared to do. Now, the angst I think you're feeling is because we don't know the master plan. We don't know what the master plan is for Bay Street. We don't know the master plan for tourism. We don't know the master plan for agriculture. What is it that we want to do that we are inviting people to come and participate in, and we don't understand what are we inviting them to do? So I understand that conversation, and perhaps that is the conversation and the question we need to put forward to the minister. What is this master plan? The same way how we asking a master plan for the Project Ridge development and showing the Google picture, we need to now question where is our Google picture for Bay Street? Where is the outlay of everything before you start talking about we inviting the Chinese to come and invest? Because we need to understand what type of investment they're coming to do.
Yeah, and go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I had to jump on it because, you know, I'm speaking now as a historian and heritage activist. I want to make sure that we don't have a new Beijing on Bay Street. I don't want to see skyscrapers or architecture that reflects something out of Beijing or any other part of China, the Yangtze River or any other place. What I want to see is investments that are working towards the restoration of old Nassau. The heritage assets that we have need to be restored. There needs to be some capital influx in there. And we need to make history pay, because our heritage assets are just fundamentally amazing and wonderful, but the buildings should not be left to just decay and rot. They need to be restored. And the restoration work is going to cost a lot of money, and it's going to require signage, and it's going to require a blueprint plan that allows for Bay Street possibly to be pedestrian in parts, and it's going to allow for vision and to have a boardwalk of sorts, and to create an environment where people have stores and restaurants and kiosks and space for performing arts and all kinds of amazing things. All of that is in my vision. I mean, I don't have the same vision as the people in government and the people that make decisions about money and investors, but I sure hope we don't turn into another Beijing. That's what I don't want.
I will quickly respond to that, Nahaja. And we know that that conversation has been, we've been having that conversation for a while. And the owners of Bay Street, the persons who own the stores, not necessarily want what Chris is pushing for. They mentioned that they want to have some skyscrapers and some sky rise, a high rise, and this is why there's a delay. And this is why they leave it dilapidated until you come there.
I was just about to say, don't do that, because that's some of them same set who got it stored up in AMMC, waiting and holding it whilst we keep it safe, and they ain't building nothing on it. No, He restored those buildings to the old charm of downtown. Mm-hmm. I wanted to stay looking like we colonized. Let the colony own us. That's, you know, tourists like that. They like to see our vestiges. Tourists like to see our shackles. tourists like to see our shackles, but they don't see us reap.
Yeah, but you could make something old look new. That's what we want to try and get at. I mean, look, you know, the greatest example of that is the NAGB. That was a plantation home, and they turned that into an art museum that makes some money. I don't know if it turns for profit. The same thing about Delancey House, right? Delancey House got turned into a distillery. They're making money, man. So you could take something that still retains its old flavor, but maybe it has a new purpose. See, that's how creative we have to get, but that's just a small-scale example. Man, we got all those old buildings on Bay Street. They all locked up, rotten, and nothing is happening in those buildings.
You walk on the balcony,
the outside of it and make the inside of it something useful.
I agree. Dr. Chris Curry, C.A. Smith, C.A. Nuri. C.A. Nuri joining me on the show. I have to ask this, guys, you know, because this administration, boy, we don't have time for slapping up, as the good, you know, the great Cindy Patrice Dotson would say. No slapping up. We don't have time for it. Before we go, and I won't get to see either of you before Wednesday, before the House of Assembly, what are your thoughts? Or what do you expect to hear? We have about 3 minutes left. What are you expecting or what are you hoping to hear from the first sitting of the House of Assembly? And CA, I'll go with you first.
What I expect to hear for the first week is a lot of shade. Nothing out of the shade. I believe that the effort need to sit small and grin and bear it for the first week. I don't expect to hear any type of promises or what will happen, but I expect to hear a lot of scandals and a lot of shade to be ushered out.
Chris?
Well, what I would love to see is some of the low-hanging fruit dealt with. When I say low-hanging fruit, I'm talking about some of the constitutional, not so much constitutional, I should say electoral challenges that we've had. I'd love to see some of the legislation related to fixed term. I'd like to see Independent Boundaries Commission. I'd like to see, electoral reform along the ways of really getting our parliamentary system and the registrar sorted out, because there's a lot of issues there. Now, I know some of that can't get accomplished within the first few days, but certainly those are things that can be done, and they don't require a referendum.
Mm-hmm. Someone says, all we can hear is you did this, you did that. Cry shame. Lord, this will be a long Wednesday. Someone can hear, no, we gone here. Nah, we in the seat now. I hope, someone says, the literacy, Bahamas Literacy Association needs a building. We need somewhere to tutor students. A building downtown would be perfect. Man, listen, can we just get our libraries to a place where the communities, the students can use our libraries effectively all the time? Like, libraries closing at 6 p.m. ain't working. I got a lot of, let me find out how nerdy you three were. Did you guys go to the library when you were younger?
Of course. I lived in the Southern Public Library.
Me too. What about you, Chris?
I went to libraries, but I have a checkered past with libraries. I often took out a lot of books, but didn't always return them. So I often got removed from libraries and sort of those kind of draconian measures. I did not have a healthy relationship with the library.
And return policy, that's why they closed down Blockbuster for people like you.
But now, as for COVID, you're not able to go inside the library. So, you know, you stand outside and give them some money and they bring back out the book to you. So you don't get a chance.
We pay for books now?
No. You photocopy and stuff at the library now.
Oh, man.
You can go to the archives and you can get an appointment for 1 hour and it'll cost you $5. Reasonable, I suppose.
Yeah, man. I'm open the libraries, man. Open the libraries. Jesus. Clubs could open that. Huh? Open the libraries. People running a dollar behind just
free the church. Free the libraries.
All right. I got to text you before we go. It says here, Good day, Mrs. Black. You're making a lot of sense. Nothing you said is shallow. Some adults need to grow up and stop thinking party and think of who is going to make our country better. I would rather vote for my leader and MP separately. Finally, I see I ain't that shallow. Someone support me, man. Yeah. All right, guys. Thank you so much. I appreciate both of you, Dr. Chris Curry, and of course, my good friend, C.A. Nuri. Guys, it was a wonderful show. Thank you so much for the time. All right, everybody, you're listening to The Hit Back with Nahaja Black, Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. I wore my black hat today. I didn't get good reviews, so I'm not going to wear it much anymore. Everyone have a great day. See you tomorrow. We're out.